Hey everyone, welcome to the worldwide leader in contrary knaveholery. I am Judge David Johnson, barely hanging on because I foolishly ate like a quart of ice cream on a waffle cone about 4 hours ago and then played an hour and a half of basketball. And now I feel like Quato is going to emerge from my stomach. So,
I saw your Facebook update.
Yeah, it's not a treat. So, but we're gonna just power through, put our head down, power through, as Michael Bluth would say. And helping me out in that regard is, of course, my counterpart in contrary knaveholery, Dan Mancini.
Greetings, and I have to say, you know, I saw your Facebook. Well, we were chatting on Skype.
Yes.
And then I saw your Facebook update, and then you went blank on Skype.
I went dark.
I thought, uh-oh, yeah, he may be giving birth.
I pulled out my microphone and it tangled up a wire and dropped my external hard drive and it scrambled all my circuitry, so I had to restart. So.
Fantastic. Technology. Yes. Isn't it wonderful?
And the cold restart. What doesn't it solve?
Yes.
But anyway, so happy Mother's Day, by the way. We're recording this on Mother's Day.
Yes.
And to keep within our kind of routine where we like to align some of our discussion topics with the holiday of that particular week, We fiddled around with doing a countdown for Mother's Day, like the countdown of the best action moms. And Dan, you put out a few of them, but really, to me, it was like the number one choice is like should be the number two choice, three, four, five on down the line. There really there's really no viable alternative as far as I'm concerned.
No.
I know you had Padme up there, and this is, of course, count on the best action moms in action, you know, as action heroes. You had Padme on there, but she did all her stuff before giving birth, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Just like, she died on a table. And besides, all her stuff was like CGI assisted and just kind of lame. So
yeah, she's not really a badass, you know?
Which is good. The Bride was effective. You know, that was a good choice.
Yeah, I hate that movie, though.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. The most self-absorbed movie in existence. Trying to think, Alien Queen, I think, you know, good times. Good times, but you know, she's a douche, you know. No one likes her. So, and Ridley didn't give birth to that little alien bastard until Alien 3, so
now, yeah, that thing is horrifying.
Yeah, so it really begins and ends with number one, which is who?
Sarah Connor from the Terminator films and television show.
Yes, which I never saw. I can't comment on that, but
Not bad. Better than some of the later movies, that's for sure.
Right. Sarah Connor for short. I mean, definitely number two. She just is obviously dominant and, you know, manages to be, like, manlier than Arnold, yet incredibly sexy. How does she pull that off, you know? How does Linda pull that off?
I don't know. But I will say this. My theory is that she is so awesome that really the shortcomings of the third and fourth Terminator movies can be rooted in her not being in the movies.
Even though we did take it upon ourselves to defend Terminator 3, though, I believe.
Yeah, correct? Yeah. I still enjoy them.
Right, though. It was missing that spark.
They're not on the same level because she's not in them, is my theory, because she's just pure awesome.
And she's great, and like, even though she's essentially two hugely different characters in those first two movies, she's great as like the big-haired, you know, 80s girl.
Yeah, Walkman listening.
Yeah, just like who's, you know, misses vehicle towards exhibition. I mean, exposition, rather. Boy, that ice cream is really playing tricks on my mind. and then she just obviously turns into Rambat in the second one, which is sweet. So
yeah, exactly.
So yeah,
Cameron directed Aliens between those two. So I think it's sort of the Ellen Ripley effect, really.
Yeah. Right.
Is after directing Sigourney Weaver, then he had to turn Sarah Connor into a total badass, which he did, and frankly, more of a badass than Ellen Ripley.
Yeah, that's true.
Get down to it.
Yeah, that has to be granted. So,
and then he's, you know, we won't get into it, but now he's directing Blue People.
That's right. Oh, we have gotten into that.
So sad.
Search the archives.
Yeah,
but we could have obviously. I guess we could have tried to stretch that discussion out into 25 minutes or so, but we thought we would do something that I don't think we've done ever, right? I mean, I don't think the stars have aligned for us to be this timely before, right?
No.
I mean, I talked about Battle LA, but you hadn't seen that, You know, so it was we never got to do a brand new spanking new release. And I rarely go out to the movie. I mean, I it's rare that I get to go out to the movies these days.
No, yeah, same with me. I mean, once you have kids, it's sort of like going to a movie is like a, you know, it's like a $50 proposition.
It's about
a proposition. It better be like a damn good movie.
It's mounting an expedition like onto the Kilimanjaro or something, you know?
Right.
It's calling the Sherpas if you want to get out.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, but we, I guess the planets aligned for us to both check this movie out, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And that movie is Thor, which has largely garnered pretty good word of mouth. What do you see as far as anecdotal evidence out there?
You know, I was looking at Rotten Tomato. I don't have it in front of me, but it was in the 90s.
Last I checked, it was at 80%, but early on it was high 90s. But, it, I mean, 80% is still impressive.
Yeah, and slightly higher among viewers, I think, than critics even. But even critics are down with it.
Yeah, I think just judging by
message. 78%.
Oh, so it's actually dipped a little bit. Anecdotally, I've heard pretty good response from the fanboys and the moviegoers and on the message boards and the comments and such. So it seems like it's a hit with that of the most cynical crowd, perhaps.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, like you said, it's on Rotten Tomatoes. It's got a pretty solid 78%. I mean, I guess some of the usual suspects didn't like it really, but there seems to be more negative reviews on the front page. But you see stuff like Thor isn't the Dark Knight, but it's a mighty fine kickoff to the summer movie season. Perfectly serviceable entry. Very much a popcorn movie. Let's see. I mean, that seems to be the consensus. Like, it's a fun popcorn summer movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy good fun. Here's the first use of By Odin's beard.
Oh, no.
Way too many bad Thor puns, you know. Like,
yes, yeah. This movie has inspired some horrendous criticism in terms of
yes,
punnery and yeah.
Well, so tell me what your take on the big Nordic badass.
I liked it, and I went in not all that enthusiastic, just kind of, you know, sort of middle of the road. Took my son to see it, and because he's into all things superheroes,
right?
And I, you know, as a kid, I never read any Thor comics, really. You know, like I think I read a few Avengers comics and stuff where I was somewhat familiar with the character and what the deal was, but didn't really get how this would be a good movie in any way. And I was surprised at how entertaining it was. I just thought it was a really good time, and I actually liked the Asgard stuff. It was pretty awesome action, especially at the beginning, and thought the cast did well, and thought Branagh had, you know, that was the other thing, was Kenneth Branagh directing it, who mainly has done Shakespeare adaptations and stuff, and did a 4-hour Hamlet and everything, and I was like, boy, you know, this could be like an Ang Lee Hulk type thing, where he takes this way too seriously. And, you know, takes the mythic aspects of things way, way, way too seriously. But he didn't. I thought there was a little bit of emotional heft to it between Thor and his father and stuff. That was a pretty good, pretty decent storyline, and it was well acted by everyone. But he didn't, you know, it was clear to me that Branagh understood this is not Shakespeare. You know, it has some sort of Shakespearean overtones to it that are nice, but it's a comic book movie and it's supposed to be fun. And I thought, you know, it was really the first time in a Marvel movie that I can think of, frankly, where there was, it's not a super heavy action movie.
It really isn't. No.
It was the first time where there was some really off the chain large scale action going on. That's what I guess surprised me the most about it, was, you know, comparing the action in Thor, the big set pieces, to something like Iron Man. They're just way more epic in Thor. And I wasn't anticipating that at all. I know you weren't as enthusiastic.
I wasn't. I'm really going to lean on you, see if you could, maybe bump my, you know, excitement up. 'Cause I went last night, late night, surrounded by comic book aficionados, we'll call them, okay, who were really into it. And I went in there not knowing anything about Thor. So,
right.
I mean, it's possible if you're familiar with the character and all that, you'll get more out of it. But I went there totally blank slate, you know, tell me about Asgard, tell me about the realms, let me know about all this stuff. And I just never, ever felt connected to the world or the characters or anything in the story. I always just never felt drawn into it at all. And therefore, I just didn't feel like any suspense. So when Thor and his compadres journey into, you know, where the Frost Giants roam, right? And there's,
right.
There's that huge, you know, the big battle scene, and they're just wiping out Frost Giants. Like, I mean, I guess it's the Superman problem. I mean, Thor is just this so over-the-top powered guy. I never once felt ever that he was in danger or anyone around him was in danger. You know, like, so like when he's fighting these Frost Giants and there's huge special effects and amazing, you know, these monsters and a lot of this action choreography and everything exploding and happening. I mean, the Frost Giants are just going down like claymation puppets, and you know, in a Christmas movie or something, not really putting up much of a fight. Thor is spinning his hammer, just doing all these incredible things. But I never felt he was in danger. I never felt like he was ever going to be touched or any of his, you know, like that one guy got stabbed, but you know, obviously that was
right.
Just a mild flesh wound or something. So I never felt like there's any, like I never felt the Frost Giants posed any kind of threat at all. So just taking that first action piece down. So, you know, and again, you know, I'm not someone who's anti-CGI, but I mean, that was so soaked in CGI and visual effects.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, just so much that, I mean, it just makes it that much tougher for me to engage, just because, I mean, the challenge number one is get me to connect with the characters and buy into the world. Challenge number two is to make me think the villains have a shot at injuring someone, you know, generates a suspense. And then challenge number three is just getting me over the hump with all the CGI. So, you know, that happens. I'm just like, and in fact, I would say that first action sequence is probably the biggest and right of all the craziness.
Yeah, it's certainly the longest.
It's the longest, most sustained, most stuff going on. Like, you know, really there's only, if you count his little incursion into the, and we're going into spoilers, by the way. So if you count his little excursion into the shield setup, you know,
right.
Actually, I would probably say my argument is I like that little action sequence. Like resonated more with me than any of the other stuff. So you have the Frost
Giants.
That was
pretty cool.
Yeah, you have him because he's just a regular dude using his brawn and his know-how, and he's beating down guys. And then you have that little cameo by Hawkeye, who thanks to Wikipedia, I found out what was up with that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, but that's obviously CGI free. That's more grounded. That's, you know, that's stuntmen and choreography. And I'm always cool with that stuff. And then after that, you had obviously with the Destroyer, was that his name or something like that?
Yeah, I had to Wikipedia that because when we left, you know, then my son was like, who's almost six, was like, you know, what's that? What was that big suit of armor?
Right.
Thing?
So know, then you had that.
Like, I don't know. Let me thank God for iPhones. Let me find out.
So then you had the big Destroyer raining hell down a Midwestern town. And that was kind of, once he got his hammer, he was just unstoppable. You know, I mean, he was like headbutting this guy. So wipe that guy out.
I guess my reaction was almost the opposite, maybe because I didn't really know anything about Thor in the comic books. I was probably more familiar with Thor from like mythology than the comic books, but like I didn't know, you know, to me he was a guy with a winged helmet and a hammer.
Yeah, right.
Red cape.
Yeah, from Adventures of Babysitting.
Right, exactly. That's about as much as I knew about him, you know, so... and I, you know, and I'm somewhat familiar with the whole Norse mythology thing, but, so it was, you know, I guess to me when they were surrounded and he was obviously being set up at that point in the movie as being too brash and overconfident.
Right.
And they were surrounded by the Frost Giants and everything. I guess maybe I did have a sense of some sense of danger. Maybe not. I mean, to a certain extent in comic book movies, other than like The Dark Knight, there's never much of a sense of danger.
Right. And that's the elephant in the room. We'll get to that later, but that's the elephant in the room too, but go on.
But I guess I was, sort of shocked and delighted by how powerful he was. Like, I had no idea how badass that hammer was and everything. And then, you know, the destroyer thing was the same thing, where he's just leveling everything, including the Warriors 3 and everything. And then Thor gets this hammer, and some really badass stuff goes down with tornadoes and, you know, him really laying a smackdown. And I mean, you're right. It is the Superman thing, where he's so powerful that it does take these frost giants and his evil brother, another spoiler, to take him down and everything. But I was just kind of entertained by how big the action was.
You know, that's a good point.
I'll be curious to see if this holds up.
See, here you go. And here's, so I could buy into that. I could eat, you know, I'll buy what you're selling there. You know, give me, you know, okay, the Alpha Stud Man. We're always crowing on this, you know, podcast. Give, you know, we love those. Although he was pretty passive and diplomatic towards the end, right? I mean, that was really the message of the movie, you know. But, you know, no preemptive strikes apparently is a message of the movie. You know, no SEAL Team Sixes, you know. But
right.
I could buy that. I would love, you know, if they're selling me, you know, epic throwdown, that's fine. So, but when he does get his hammer, from that point on, it's like his foes didn't quite really measure up for me. So, like,
yeah.
So, I mean, so even though that giant guy was, you know, kind of cool, once he got all thored up, the guy had not, you know, it was like the Pacquiao fight, you know, last night. It was a foregone conclusion. So it was over really quick. And then when he gets to Asgard, he kind of has that one, you know, he has that face to face with Loki.
Which is almost unbelievable to me. Because Thor was so badass every time he had his hammer and was fighting prior to that.
Right.
That when they squared off, I thought, you know, it just seemed to me like Loki would last maybe 3 seconds.
Yeah, right. And so that just felt like, well, the script says we need to extend this fight scene, so we'll do this. So, yeah, so if you had showed yourself.
I did like some of the touches, like when he holds Loki down just by putting the hammer
cool.
in his chest and walks away.
That was cool for sure. And I think towards that end, it just got so crazy at the end too with the effects, you know.
Yeah.
He's hammering away at the bridge. It reminded me of the A-Team with all the containers flying around. Just so crazy. I felt like I got lost in the kaleidoscope of visual effects, you know. So I guess it really just comes down to, I just didn't quite feel drawn into the world at all. You know, I mean, I was given all this exposition. I was shown these beautiful sequences of Asgard. You know, I got all this stuff. And maybe I just wasn't compelled by it. That's a possibility too. But
yeah.
I just didn't feel like – and you mentioned The Dark Knight. And again, we are self-confessed douchebag fanboys of that movie.
Absolutely. You
know? I mean, we are cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs over that movie. I mean, and we've talked about that at length. And while, like, it's difficult to actually even align those two movies up together – because they don't even feel like part of the same genre, you know?
Right.
And so I don't even think it might be fair to compare them, because it's hard to call The Dark Knight a superhero movie, because it's more like a crime film or a thriller or something, starring a guy who happens to dress up as a bat. But it just as an example of a comic book movie, maybe, you know, there is something where I just bought into a world completely.
Right.
You know?
And it's a, you know, The Dark Knight is the only comic book movie I can think of off the top of my head where there is a genuine sense of peril throughout the movie. You know, maybe the only other one is the third X-Men movie, which is not a very good movie. But,
yeah.
You know, you do have characters who are killed off, legitimately killed off and stuff.
Yes, I'd buy
which
that.
Which is not supposed to happen in comic book movies.
Right.
And I liked that part of it, that it went there when most avoid it, although it seemed to kind of try to backpedal at the end, which was a drag. But I really can't, going all the way back to like Richard Donner's Superman and stuff, I can't think of any other comic book movie than The Dark Knight that,
yeah, I mean, maybe Superman
really
2
has peril,
and maybe, you know? Superman 2 when he's depowered, you know, or when he's outnumbered,
you kind of know he's gonna,
yeah, that's true. But again, it's a Superman effect. It's the Neo effect. It's the post first Matrix and Neo effect, you know, where
and you know,
where Neo's a god. So then all of his kung fu fights are just pointless exercises, you know? All they are just examples to play techno music and show off choreography, because there's no chance anyone's going to take him down.
Right. And like the Dark Knight is the only, seriously, the only comic book superhero movie I can think of where the first time I watched it sitting in that theater, you know, as it kind of moved into the third act or moved through the third act, I was not 100% sure
right.
that Batman was going to win at the end of this thing.
And you could argue that he didn't either.
And, right. And how was he going to win if he did win, sort of thing, you know?
But we don't want to hijack this with Batman because maybe it is Dan. Maybe the lesson is that it's not fair to even compare anything to the Dark Knight, I suppose. Maybe that's our douchebag fanboys and like, it's just not fair. It's just not fair. You know, like I really do think that it did kind of change the rules of the game. You know, I mean, there's a movie that used comic books, you know, it's comic books, superheroes. It took the concept, you know, of a man in a costume fighting crime.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you bought into it. And there's danger in it. The CGI was there, but limited, you know, which would be impossible with Thor. I understand that. You can't make a Thor movie without the CGI. Just like
right.
you can't make a Green Lantern movie without the CGI. I understand that, too. But I will say that some things I liked about Thor was I thought Chris Hemsworth was great in it. I liked him a lot.
Dude's going to be big.
Dude's going to be big. I remember him from Star Trek for a small part. You know, right. Star Trek, I liked him then, too. So, but I thought he had great comic timing, you know? Like, those are some of my favorite sequences, the ones that were kind of comic, you know?
Yeah, and then some fanboys seem to hate those, and to me it was like a throwback to the 80s when summer movies were supposed to have an element of fun.
Right.
They weren't supposed to be dour, you know?
That's right.
Always serious, taking themselves deadly serious all the time.
Like I laughed out loud when he finished his coffee and smashed the mug on the ground and abandoned more. That's great, you know? So I like that. I thought he was great in that. I think he's a real fine. I look forward to seeing him in other stuff. I thought the Natalie Portman stuff was okay. You know, I mean I just ended up feeling like he liked her so much because she looked like Natalie Portman, you know? I mean,
she was
cute and hot. So I don't know. It was just
Wonder, you know, is she going to be in the Avengers movie?
I don't think so,
you know, I don't know, but because the role was definitely underwritten. I mean, I thought they had chemistry.
Right. Yeah,
she certainly had more chemistry with him than with Hayden Christensen in the Star Wars movies.
Absolutely.
But I mean, the role was not. There wasn't a lot there.
But what I was thinking, you know, so I'm looking at that. The only reason I think they have chemistry is because she looks like Natalie Portman, and he looks like this giant ripped. Blonde American gladiator, perfect specimen, you know? So obviously.
Yeah, because he's got that. There's that woman that hangs out with the Warriors 3 who's, you know, no slouch in the
That's
looks
right.
department and is right. presumably immortal and super powered. And obviously, based on the end of the movie when he's longing for Natalie Portman, she's got a thing for Thor, too. And
so, but it's like,
Thor, why you would choose, you know, a mortal right. woman from Earth over this other woman is beyond me, but, you know. It's scripted that way. He had no choice.
I thought what's her face? Kat Jenner. The girl, the comic relief girl, you know?
Yeah.
I thought that got a little trying towards the end, you know? Like, she would fire off these quips.
Yeah.
Like, on the verge of painful death, you know? Like the destroyer's coming, shooting killer laser beams, and she's kind of making these iPhone quips. So, it's like, eh.
Yeah.
So that was a little, but, and I don't know if you stayed for the end credit sequence.
I did, yeah. I figured there would be one, so.
Yeah, I had to read up a little bit on that. I guess it's like the cosmic cube or something like that. But it didn't really make any – I didn't really recognize it so much.
Yeah,
so.
I imagine we'll see it again in Captain America. But.
And it definitely felt like – overall, too, maybe this is me just being cynical. It felt like the Avengers is the end game. We're making the Avengers movie. And Thor is in the Avengers, and there's no way you can write an Avengers movie without having Thor. We got to do a movie about Thor. Here it is. So, though I don't want to make that sound like they half-assed it because they obviously didn't. I mean, the money's up there on the screen. You know, Branagh isn't a hack director. You know, so I'm not going.
No, and I got to say, in terms of actual story in that movie too, it has a lot more story than like Iron Man did.
I agree.
Which I wouldn't say it's a better movie because, I mean,
Iron Man minus Robert Downey Jr. isn't awesome. Let's be honest.
Right. And that's exactly what I said in the forums at DVD Verdict when they were talking about Thor was, you know, Because I think there was a comparison. Oh, it's there was some argument over whether or not it was better than Iron Man. And it's like, I don't know that it's, I would call it better than Iron Man. But it's more, there's more there.
Yeah, I would agree.
Than there is an Iron Man. And I'd if you take Robert Downey Jr. out of Iron Man, it's a pretty lousy movie.
Yeah.
But Robert Downey Jr. is in Iron Man, so it is not a lousy movie.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's a blast. And so, you know, it's sort of a meaningless exercise to even say that, but yeah, it certainly has more plot.
I agree. I mean, and that's because, you know,
and by, it doesn't end by with its, a
I mean, the characters, the mythology.
The Big Lebowski in a tin suit fighting him.
Yes, that's right.
This is like one of the weakest third act villain things I've ever seen.
Absolutely. Pathetic. I'm not gonna say, you know, I sat there and I sucked up the summer movie insanity of it. I'll probably never watch it again, you know. But I think my problem was, and maybe again though, that's why I said maybe if someone loved Thor, they would engage with it more because they'd connect with the world. I just never connected with the world, you know. I mean, even our protagonist, I couldn't really relate or connect to him. Except, like, he made me laugh, you know, so it was more of that kind of passive connection with him.
I mean, I kind of like the journey from douche to stand-up guy.
I suppose, even though it was kind of telegraphed. I mean, I don't know. I guess
it Yeah. And yeah, I get what you're saying in terms of, you know, you're either going to click with that world or you're not. And And for me, there were some things about it that were cool in terms of I just like some of the visual. I liked the idea of, even though it's completely redonkulous, of this, of Asgard sort of sitting on this ocean that's somehow in space. And then when the bridge, when the Rainbow Bridge is destroyed at the end, now we're really getting into spoiler territory.
Yeah.
I liked how then suddenly there's just like a waterfall into outer space.
Yes.
And things falling into space and stuff. It made no sense, but it was just cool looking. Right. And it just kind of worked on a metaphorical level for me and a visual level. So, you know, I was, as like a piece of fantasy, I was like, okay, yeah, I'll you know, it's cool.
Yeah. Oh, the eye candy was there, you know? The eye candy was there. So, you know, again, maybe this is just a testament to me, to my, like, to what interests me kind of changing, you know? Like, I just, you know, what have we talked about, you know, like the Dark Knight and, Have we talked about District 9? I mean, we've talked about District 9, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, like, to me, like, the action scene at the end there, you know, that's some of that kind of action resonates with me. So a lot of that kind of action, and precisely the reason Avatar didn't work for me at all either, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, the action was just kind of there. I didn't really care about the characters. You know, I just didn't have anything invested there. So, you know, that's just why I just felt it detached. And that's kind of a similar experience I had with Thor. I mean, Thor was certainly didn't poop on my brainstem like Avatar did, but
no.
But there was just that kind of element of detachment.
Yeah, and you know, every one of the Marvel movies is at least a step, if not many, many steps down from The Dark Knight.
Yeah, I mean, really.
And The Dark Knight so changed the game that, you know, this was another thing where this kind of came up in Facebook conversations. To me, The Dark Knight so changed the game that I actually pretty much hate all three Spider-Man movies now.
Yeah, I saw
them. And I would have, you know, when Spider-Man 2 came out, I was among the crowd who said, you know, this is one of the, if not the best comic book movie I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Probably not. I probably would have been one of, because I don't think I would have ranked it higher than Superman at that point. But, you know, one of the best. And now it's just, I find it totally unwatchable.
Oh,
Dark Knight.
Interesting.
Where, you know, I just can't stand the characterization of Dr. Octopus. It's long. There's too much CGI fighting in it. That's looks real rubbery and stuff.
Right.
And I just can't. All three of those movies are just horrendous to me now.
Well, Spider-Man 3 ruined the whole series for me. So I liked 1 and 2.
I can see that.
But Spider-Man 3 ruined it all for me. Spider-Man 3 was like snapped me out of my haze and said, well, I guess all these are kind of dopey then, you know? So,
yeah. I think the third X-Men movie kind of had that effect for me with that whole series too.
Yeah.
I'm not even really that enthusiastic about this new X-Men movie because it's sort of like, well, you know.
I was never like.
I'm kind of over that whole thing.
I know we're kind of digressing into more of general, you know, comic book talk, but like I didn't loathe the third one, but I didn't really love the first two either. You know, like love them. So I know it's not like the third one crushed my soul. You know, I mean the second one was kind of cool and badass at some points. I think the first one is overrated. And
right,
there's terrible parts in the first one.
Like, right, for the second one to really stay great to me. The third one had to pay off.
Yeah,
its ending, and it just didn't. And I'm with you. When I saw the third one, I did not hate it as much as many people did.
Yeah.
Especially comic book people, because to me, I know for you know people who are X-Men fans, they just saw characters, and it was like you know maybe one of their favorite characters got like you know 5 seconds in the movie, and then it was very annoying. And to me, I didn't know who any of them were.
I'm not
familiar. Like, I know the main players and stuff, but it's like, oh, there's a guy who, you know, spikes come out of his face. Awesome. And he's on screen for a few seconds and that's it. And, you know, I don't know who he is. But the hardcore fans do. And that was very annoying to them. So I didn't have that experience. And it was like, well, it worked. Like I said, it was satisfying in the level that had the balls to kill some characters off. And, you know,
if you didn't know who directed it,
pay off.
I think if a lot of people didn't know who directed it, they may not have hated it as much either, too. I don't know.
That's true.
So, you know, in fact, as we talk about this, I have a hard trouble really summoning up, you know, a Marvel movie that I really, really, really like. You know, I would have said Iron Man, but again, it's all Robert Downey Jr. to me, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly not Ang Lee's The Hulk. I enjoyed the second Hulk a little bit more. But you know,
yeah, I actually
much.
Like. You know, I have to admit that I will rewatch. I think I've probably rewatched the second Hulk on DVD or on Blu-ray more than Iron Man. I'm not sure why. I did watch the TV show when I was a kid, and there are overtones of the TV show in it. So maybe it's just a nostalgia trip or something. But
No, I agree. I thought that, yeah, I like
that CGI thing, you know, rubber.
Towards the end, it becomes like a ball of CGI. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly brisker and more fun. So I mean, yeah, maybe I'm with you. I might put those up right next to each other, you know. But there's been a lot of like Ghost Rider to me was a disaster.
Yeah,
I mean, just so there's been like a lot of ones that just didn't land. I will say though, you know, as we move to close this out and. And on a happy note, I do look forward to Captain America a lot because if any movie hits that kind of sweet spot that I like personally of trying to get a little more grounded, perhaps, you know, with more palatable danger, that one seems like a good candidate, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's, you know, we're not talking about the God of Thunder here. We're talking about a guy who's roided up pretty much, you know? Some dude, we're talking about, you know, Mark McGuire in 1996 or so or whatever, you know, instead of Thor or Superman. So, and that's
Nazis. It's World War II.
It's period. It's Joe Johnston directed it.
Right. You know, Rocketeer fame. So, I mean, if he can pull off like another Rocketeer vibe around it, you know, but with Captain America, it could be really superb.
So I will say that I have open mind about that. And, you know, that does appeal to me. So I'm looking forward to that. But for now, I guess Thor just was kind of just like another Marvel movie to me and one that I just couldn't buy in. And I guess the conclusion here, Dan, is the Dark Knight rules, right?
Yeah, as always. Isn't that the conclusion to any one of the episodes of this show is that one of the following rules, the Dark Knight, sudden death, or psycho kickback.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it really comes down to that, you know? You can boil
those are really
down.
The only three movies you need to own.
Yeah, I mean, really, really boil down to it. You know, hey, I like this, you know, I love the movie Babe. Well, if you really boil it down to its elements, you'll find all that in Psycho Kickboxer. So.
Right. Babe is no Psycho Kickboxer.
Actually, speaking of Babe and speaking of grounded action, speaking of engaging in a world, there's another way that I really get drawn into an action film, and that's when the action is staged by lunatics.
Yes.
Like in what I just watched today, the chase scene in The Road Warrior.
Yes, yes.
When it is lunatic staging this thing, then I am drawn in because
that is pure lunacy. Because
pure
somebody,
lunacy.
Somebody died during that, and they covered it up.
You know,
because there's no way You know, if the official record says nobody died during the filming of that action sequence at the end, the big truck chase, then
right,
the historical record has been altered.
Absolutely.
In order to protect the guilty.
A fringe event occurred or something and everything got reset. Yeah. So, all right. Well, we covered a lot of turf here, actually. I'm pretty proud of us. And, you know, my stomach feels pretty good. So maybe I just had to get that off my chest. So I appreciate that, Dan. That's good.
Yeah. You were just, it wasn't ice cream. It was Thor.
That's right. And you got to think, you think Thor's got to be, you know, a member of the old white man cabal, right? Maybe a founding member?
I would think so. Odin is, anyway.
Odin's got to be, absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely. All right. Oh, and one final thing. Kudos to Thor. Idris Elba was in it. So anytime I see any actors from The Wire getting big screen burn, I'm happy. So
almost unrecognizable.
Unrecognizable. Absolutely.
In it nonetheless.
So, all right. Well, on that positive note, we'll wrap things up. And all we have to say is what?
Thanks, 10 points easy. Object!